Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome to the KE Report, political, politics, etc., etc., etc. Talking with Jimmy McKinney right now. Jim, as you guys know, does most of the, not most, but a significant amount of what I would call very credible research on the topics that we discuss. Everything that Jimmy says, by the way, is documented. He doesn't just bullshit about, you know, because he's angry at Biden or whatever. Everything is documented, and I certainly appreciate that. CFS is doing exactly the same thing, and I very much appreciate that. Irish Tony, you owe me a big thank you, my man. I was up again last night until 10 o'clock. I did have an open beer, but I answered virtually every single comment that came in on for what Jim and I recorded yesterday. Jimmy, let's start with you. What do you think about some of the stuff that Eddie is sending us in terms of videos?
Of course, the Benny Hill videos. Gotta love it. So appreciate that, Eddie. And I also, you know, he's made a couple of comments. I don't have a lot of time to actually make, to respond to all the comments on there. I get a chance to look at them, and sometimes I respond, sometimes I don't. But I appreciate everybody's comments in there. And I do want people to know that we do take a look at it, that I look at it, and I do think about a lot of things that are said, and I look at a lot of the things that they put out there. So I think other people out there listening should go ahead and head to the blog and take a look at some of the great input that some of our regular contributors put in here.
I would really like to ask some more of our radio contributors to come on the blog. Just go to the website, which is www.kereport.com, and then go to the political section, and it's very apparent how you can comment. I am learning. I echo everything Jimmy just said. I am learning so much from our regular listeners that it is absolutely amazing. And I want you to keep one thing in mind. This is not a sales pitch. Jim and I are doing this out of passion. I'm an old retired guy, and sure, everybody would like to make money, but I'm not charging anybody for anything that I do, and neither is Jim. So keep that in mind. Everybody else I'm finding has a product to sell, or they want to sell subscriptions or what have you. We have nothing to sell. All we want to do is interact with you guys and really try to become the definitive source on political issues. I want to start out a little bit about the COVID situation. It is running rampant right now, even though Boris Johnson yesterday in the UK lifted the mandate for wearing masks all the time. But I did a little bit of research on it last night, and the number of active COVID cases in Whatcom County, where I live, is probably up around 6%. Take out the probably, it's around 6% if you take the number of people who are sick with COVID, and if you take the total population of Whatcom County, do the division, you're going to see it's about 6%. I want to say one other thing. Human nature, I have all my faith in human nature, is coming back. Everybody is pulling together in the sense that people are wearing masks. They believe that they are effective, whether they are or whether they aren't. It's not for me to say, but I do wear a mask. I wear the new N25, I believe it's called. So people are always putting together. In our neighborhood, I basically put out a call to help anybody. We have some elderly people living in our neighborhood, and I'm one of the oldest. But anybody who needs any help getting groceries and they don't want to leave the house or whatever, you know, we have volunteers who are doing that. On a positive note, the local hospital is saying that they're predicting that towards the middle to the end of February, this thing could be pretty much put to bed in terms of our county. Jimmy, you're on, bud.
So my son tested positive last week at Clemson. He came home for the weekend. And then my daughter tested positive. And I read the little information on the testing, the actual testing documentation for the FDA emergency use authorized test for COVID. It is not an FDA approved test. And okay, so this is something that I want people to think about. These are questions that must be answered. So the big push right now is this Omicron variant, right?
Yep.
That's what everyone's saying. It's the Omicron variant. So when did the Omicron variant pop up and where? Around November in South Africa, right? Isn't that what everybody said? Okay, Omicron variant. And some researchers there were able to identify the variant. So that's late November, mid-November, something along those lines. Maybe even a little bit earlier before they actually, when it popped up and then they started identifying it. And then the media started taking hold of it through December and now through January. So in October, November, the FDA actually canceled the approval for a large number of the tests because they were inaccurate.
Right.
So we're having a huge supply chain issue. And here's where I'm getting to my point. Tell me how the tests that have had problems were somehow manufactured and somehow the testing is able to. I would like someone to tell me and explain to me how this is possible. That something that began to be prevalent in November, December timeframe through the media is somehow identifiable by tests that were had to be produced and shipped well before the October, maybe even September origination of this particular variant, and how someone could identify it with these same tests. Something is very strange going on here with information. There is no possible way that the tests were able to be performed and giving accurate data to identify what variant of the virus is at this point, in my view. And that you couldn't have gotten the test to make that determination. And I don't know how. I mean, if someone's got the answer, I would love to hear it. If some epidemiologist or some specialist in this program can get on and make comment on it, that would be fantastic. But tell me how, with the supply chain crisis, when we're short of testing right now all over the country, and all of a sudden we're able to identify the Omicron variant and it's spreading everywhere. Here's what I believe is happening. I believe that this is spreading because it's always been spreading, and it's an incredibly easily transmissible variation of a coronavirus.
But if I'm not mistaken, Jimmy, let me just throw one thing in here. People who get the Omicron variant, and we have a couple of friends up here, Glenn and his wife, for example.
How do you know?
How do you know
they're Omicron variant? How is it proven?
I don't know, but all I want to say is when they are detected, when a person up in this neck of the woods anyway is detected as to, so to speak, having the Omicron variant, and we're talking now in January, they may even not do anything other than feel sick. Glenn came to book club yesterday because he did the quarantine, personal quarantine for 5 days, stayed home and then came to book club yesterday. I said, how are you feeling? And he said, I'm feeling great. I said, how bad was it when you had it? And he said, not bad at all. I just had a sore throat. So yep, maybe
like
that's, I mean, I don't know, Jimmy, there are so many questions, man.
That's my point. Something very strange is going on when people are trying to identify every little illness. I mean, coronaviruses are cold viruses.
Yep.
They pass around there. Colds spread. People get them. I have one right now. My son was fine. My daughter never even really showed any symptoms. My wife and I both have sore throats and a cold right now. And yeah, so tell me that somehow the system is able to identify them differently. If someone can tell me, I think that's fantastic. But I don't buy it, and I think there's a lot of manipulation out there right now with information, and it's becoming pretty evident to me that there's a lot of manipulation.
CFS, this is right up your alley. Can you address this one for Jimmy, if you would? You two, come on, Tony, get off your butt and give us some help with this one. Same with you, actually, mainly the same with you, Mr. Fellow Bible Student, out of the box. By the way, I have almost finished my study of Isaiah. We got about 10 seconds left, Jimmy. I want to one more plea to everybody, radio listeners, everybody. Please try to answer Jimmy's question. We're looking for help with you guys. Either go to our website on the blog or send me an email, alcorlin@gmail.com. Going to be right back.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in, continuing on in the first hour of the KER Report, Stressing Politics. A number of you guys have been asking me what I think about the book about Fauci that Kennedy wrote, and I have to say I kind of got bored with it because I know what's going on with Fauci, and so what if I can make cocktail talk and say, look how much money he's making, et cetera, et cetera. I think we have a situation that one person simply cannot cover here. We have a very difficult situation. Jimmy, you've got some facts at hand. Let's talk about them first, sir.
So based on documents that were released and some Freedom of Information Act release, there's more and more information coming out. But there's some very big questions about how Anthony Fauci has handled all of this. And then one of the big issues is actually the origins of COVID-19. And of course, initially when they had a teleconference with experts in the field, especially three specific scientists, Kristen Anderson, Robert Gary, and Michael Farzan, they initially said 60 to 80% chance that was out of a lab. But then very rapidly, they produced a paper called the Proximal Origin that was cited by many, many outlets, news media, and governments as a natural origin for the COVID-19. And this was what it turns out is it looks like, according to documentation, that Anthony Fauci and, of course, Francis Collins, the director of the Francis Collins, the National Institute of Health, NIH director, were trying to avoid putting pressure on China. And now the information, and Epoch Times has gone and reviewed some of the funding data, and it looks like to those particular doctors and others that were signed this document, NIAID, Anthony Fauci's organization, gave over $50 million in funding to to these doctors between 2020 and 2021. That is a very big sign of potential corruption, that they may have manipulated information in order to support a narrative that Francis Collins and Anthony Fauci wanted to have to avoid undermining a relationship with China. Uh-huh. Very, very dangerous precedent. And it really undermines trust and faith in the entire CDC and National Institute for Health, and of course, Anthony Fauci and his NIAID. You give too much power to officials for too long, they believe they're above the law.
It's always been the case, Jim. I agree 100% with that one. I agree 1,000%. Anthony Fauci was put in a very, very important position in terms of the U.S. government. That may be an incorrect statement on my part, but the fact of the matter, Dr. Fauci is in an incredibly important situation. But just remember who started Fauci on this particular ladder. Donald Trump?
No. Anthony Fauci. I want to make sure everyone understands this. Anthony Fauci has been the director of NIAID since the mid-80s.
I understand
He was the respected individual that was supposed to be responsible, and he was the official that was already embedded into this administration well before Donald Trump ever came to power. The problem is the people that you're supposed to trust in our government. And this is a big difference, what people don't realize. The people that are inside the Washington Beltway that are supposed to be looking out for the best interest of the people in the United States
have
become so disconnected that they're willing to do anything to protect their own interests. That is the problem. And unfortunately, it's Donald Trump, Mike Pence. Most people thought from the outside that these people, that those insiders in Washington were there for our best interest. But it's becoming clearer and clearer that there is an entire set of people inside that Washington Beltway that don't look at the world that way. They look at their own self-interest.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear. That's just what I just said right now. With the reputation that Fauci had when he was in charge of the COVID situation in the Trump administration, Donald Trump had every reason in the world to think that because of his qualifications, because of his resume, et cetera, he was the guy to do it. And that's what I said.
Yeah, there we are.
But he did very definitely give as he called him, Tony Fauci, quite a few accolades. This thing has gotten to be so complicated. I mean, I don't disagree with what you're saying, Jimmy, but this thing has gotten to be so complicated that this is really a time for Americans to work together. Support your neighbors. If you can help them out, do it. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm sorry, you know, Jimmy, I didn't mean to cut you off, but you know, I know that's what you did.
No, let's tie this into, you know, this entire ideology that somehow we have to have a relationship with China, that in order to a positive relationship with an authoritarian dictatorial government that will be using any means possible to take power.
Right.
That is an incredibly bad idea, to sacrifice basic principles and to actually cover them up in order to put to protect a relationship for research or other things in their mind that they think they're doing for a better cause. But the reality is, the Chinese Communist Party is not looking out for America's best interest. And understanding that's critical. And we get to the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab and, of course, the globalist corporations that are out there bending over backwards to appeal and appease to the Chinese government for the market. You're seeing an incredibly dangerous precedent for the future of not only America, but entire Western civilization, with the demographics and the economic and growing military power of a Chinese communist authoritarian regime. And I don't know when it's going to abate. You know, this is crazy stuff that's happening out there. And a lot of people don't see it because they're looking at and the media is, you know, shaping an opinion. They're looking at a very small bit of information, and it's completely shaped in order to protect those big elite interests. And it's becoming clear in the World Economic Forum.
Yep. It is. It's unfortunate that, on the one hand, it's unfortunate in my life that I'm dealing with this, plus the death of my wife, plus on and on and on and on, that I'm dealing with it, but I'm kind of happy about it because it's making me a stronger person. I'm starting to realize also how the people in my neighborhood are all kind of pulling together. That makes me feel kind of good. So who knows? This could be a bit of a blessing in disguise. Jimmy, we got about a minute and a half. Make a comment on Davos, would you?
Yeah, so, you know, World Economic Forum, they have the meeting. There's a fantastic video. I think it's on, it's a guy basically puts what's his name here? I'm going to take a quick look at it.
Klaus.
James Lindsay, Watching Narratives Crumble. It's Conceptual James on a Twitter account. And it's a woman at the Economic Forum saying, you know, the good news, elite across the world trust each other more and more. The bad news, the majority of people don't trust, they trust the elite less. You know what? There's a group of people, very powerful, influential people, that are trying to shape the future of the world.
Yeah.
And they want an outcome that benefits them in their idea. That is a very dangerous precedent when you take away the choice of the people. And that's what we're facing right now. AP comes out and says things like, oh, well, the Great Reset is
gotta cut it, Jimmy, we got to cut it short. Go ahead. Yeah. You close it up right now.
Yeah. No, that's fine. It's just that, you know, when you have the media coming out and saying, hey, Great Reset's a good thing, we've got to worry.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in time for the second half of KER Politics. This is a bit of an anomaly in the political sector in the sense that I'm interviewing a gentleman who is a medical doctor and he is also a published author. I'm going to talk about his book, and as soon as I introduce the doctor, you're going to see exactly why I'm so interested in talking to him. Fellow's name is Dr. Tarek Katela. He's the author of a book entitled The Six Pillars of advocacy, embrace your cause, and transform lives. All of us on this program, all of my regular listeners, are attempting to do that. Unfortunately, some of you have the following philosophy, and this is quoting Dr. Catella directly. You're powerless to change the status quo, so you think. You're no match for the special interest embedded in the U.S. government. You've lost the battle before you've ever begun. But Dr. Catella is here to say, I'm here to tell you that none of that is true. And you explain why it's not true in your books, sir, the six pillars of advocacy, embrace your cause, and transform lives. Doctor, you've got the mic. Why is that an untrue statement? Why? How do people make a difference in today's society, sir?
Thank you so much to you and your listeners, Al. So, yes, I mean, a lot of things seems to be very daunting job. And very difficult to achieve and at different levels. But if people really work hard and try to change them, then this happens. And I mentioned, you know, two or three examples in the book of, you know, how we made changes that was very difficult to make, or at least assumably it's almost impossible. One example I had is internationally, where we work with President Trump to save millions of people in Syria. And as you remember, I mean, President Trump was not interventionist, and he wanted to withdraw from everywhere. And so having him do save millions of people, that was something big that was hard to imagine before. But with hard work and with following the six pillars of advocacy that I mentioned in the book, that was achievable. Same thing, we had some bills that was supported by, that was locally here in the state of Indiana by the big corporation and for healthcare to make more profit. And we felt, well, this bill was going to hurt patient care and quality of care. And so we stood up to these large entities and corporations, and we were able to beat them in the state house and get rid of that bill and make sure that it doesn't become a law. So yes, things can be doable. It just need persistence. It need networking. It need to believe in your cause. And need to use some of these steps that I mentioned in the book on how to network and fundraise and educate and use some of these, you know, tools like media and meeting the legislature and so forth.
Well, Dr. Cantell, let me ask you a question. First of all, I am very curious about the healthcare issues that you changed in Indiana. But what I'm very curious about, in addition to that, is I'm very curious about the situation in Syria. A huge amount of hardship existed for many of the Syrian people. And I'm curious as to how you approached the President Donald Trump and what you actually accomplished, sir.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's very bad situation there. And it's, you know, the worst refugee crisis since World War II. And it's, you know, where people wanted freedom and democracy like what we have here in the West, but they were faced with a brutal dictator who was supported by the evil power in the world, such as Putin and Russia and the Iranian militia and all that.
Right.
So these people, you know, did not get the support they needed to make that change into democracy and freedom and lack of corruption and all these good things that we, you know, are fortunate to have in the West, even though I know some people might argue about the, you know, the level of that, but we're still very fortunate to be able to elect our leaders and our government. So that was, you know, I'll try to make it very brief because it's really a long story, but we knew that at that time in 2018, Putin was going along with Assad against all the rebels and anyone who had control of lands outside the regime control. And so they basically besieged the areas and kept bombing it with these Russian air jets till eventually people surrender. And most of the time they surrender because of hunger. They don't allow any food to come to these areas. And some of these areas surrender after a few months, and some of them stayed for years because they were farming lands. And so they kill anyone who even tried to bring bread to these areas. And so after people surrender, they give them the option, you know, you can go to Idlib. And Idlib was on the border with Turkey. And so the Idlib people grew up from 1 million people to 4 million people.
Mm-hmm.
And then Putin decided, well, he's going to go and attack that area. And we were fortunate enough to meet President Trump at that moment. And, of course, the meeting did not come from nothing. It came from, again, following these six pillars of advocacy that, you know, are there in the book. And because it's not easy to meet President of the United States in the first place. And so we met with him. He was coming here to our state, to Indiana, to support the candidate, Senator Braun, at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And we told him of the story. We told him, well, there are 4 million people who are going to die. They have no place to go to because everyone used to go to Idlib, and now Idlib is going to be attacked, and there's going to be on your watch, and this, you know. And so his answer was, which surprised me, to be honest with you, was, well, we're not going to let this happen. We will wipe them off the earth. And I was surprised. I did not think that he's really going to be so passionate to protecting people from different nations. You know?
Right.
And I told my friends who were with me, let's see, let's not tell the other community members about this and see, because we don't want to be embarrassed, you know. And they said, but we have to tell them what he told us. So anyway, next day, Secretary of State Pompeo tweeted about the issue and threatened Assad and Putin to that it's going to be reckless to attack Idlib. And then we start feeling, well, this is serious now. And then the day after, President Trump himself tweeting about this. 10 days later, Erdogan, the Turkey president, and Putin, they signed an agreement, a ceasefire agreement, and the area was safe for the next year. When they asked President Trump about a month later in one of the press conferences, he said, yes, I stopped this. I heard from a Syrian woman. She told me about her family there. I read the same thing in New York Times, and I ordered Pompeo and Bolton not to let this happen. He repeated that twice. So, yes, we were able, against all the odds, to reach the United States president and to convince him of putting pressure on Putin to stop the killing of about 4 million people and make them refugees.
Dr. Cattell, we have to take a real quick commercial break here. I apologize for that. We're going to be back, though, in about 30 seconds, if I could get you to pick up here on this particular story. And then I would also like you to talk about medical situation there over in Indiana. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to be right back with Dr. Tarek Cattell. He is the author of The Six Pillars of Advocacy, Embrace Your Cause and Transform Lives. I'm going to be right back. Welcome back. Continuing with my discussion with Dr. Cattell. The doctor is the author of the book. It's not a novel. It's very definitely nonfiction, called The Six Pillars of Advocacy, Embrace Your Cause and Transform Lives. Can you wrap up the story with President Trump, how you saved all the Syrian lives, sir?
As I mentioned, you know, came against the odds that we were able to reach out to the United States president and convince him to do something to protect millions of people somewhere else. So I think this speaks a lot of that there is no barriers for people who want to do something on a national level or an international level, as long as they have a noble cause that they are advocating for, and they believe in it, and they work hard to achieve it through several steps that they have to take according to the book. Yeah, so the first step is to have a noble cause. Because if you're advocating for personal interest, somebody's family interest, is different than when you're advocating to help, you know, thousands and thousands and millions of people. So the more the cause is noble and good, the more likely you're going to succeed, because people will try to help you. If it's something that's more personal interest, you know, then not too many people will sympathize, you know. So that's number one. Number two is to network. So after you have your cause and you are adamant to pursue it and to push for it to see that it's happening, you need to network with like-minded people who believe in your cause, who are willing to help you as well. The third pillar is education, and education tends to be on twofold. Number one, you need to educate your community members, the members who might sympathize with you and believe in the same cause, about the importance of this work. And number two, you need to educate the policymakers and anyone, you know, who is in the decision making about this cause, and explain to them, you know, the importance of it and why it's important that they help you. The next step is fundraising. There is plenty of basically possibilities for spending money on when you're trying to advocate for a cause, whether it's just having a media, you know, outlets cover your cause, or whether it's putting signs outside, or just meeting, you know, hosting events to educate, you know, people about your cause. The fifth one is to establish organization, because without infrastructure for organization, it's hard to, you know, put your prints on what you're doing. So you need the organization to be legal, to be able to raise funds, to be able to meet with policymakers, and to be able even to advertise for your cause. And eventually, the last step is to use the advocacy tools, and there is plenty of advocacy tools that I put in the book, but the two main that I will mention here is using the media. The media is very powerful, and you have to be specific though and be focused, because the media is very expensive as well, so you need to know who your audience is. And also meeting the decision makers, whether they are in State House or whether they are in the administration or the Congress. So you need to also be tailored to who you need to meet based on what cause you're advocating for. So this is a very brief summary of the six steps that I called six pillars of advocacy.
How would this relate, and this may be kind of an off-the-wall question, but Dr. Cattell, how would this relate to an individual who wants to make changes in his or her life? It sounds to me like you're just saying concentrate, concentrate, concentrate. But how would you relate that to personal change? Excuse me.
Yeah, so true. So there are a couple of changes here. It could be personal, that the person needs to change himself or herself for better. Or it could be personal, as it means to changing the environment around it. Mm-hmm. And I talked, and I put actually a full chapter that I put it as an example of how people can change the environment around them and can advocate for a cause that, you know, I just gave a sample that I made here to show them how we can implement the six pillars of advocacy to advocate for any cause. And I put an example of an area that somebody is driving through. It has poor education, has the children are not in school, and how they can take that and start, you know, advocating for better school system there, mm-hmm. and better life for the children.
Right.
And I implemented the six pillars in that case study about that case. So that's there in the book about how you can change your environment. Anything that you see that needs to be changed, that's not fair, that affects your own life or the life of your family or community, and try to use the book to help you advocate and get results and get success in making change happen.
Dr. Cattell, so what I'm hearing you say is, I'm hearing you basically say that it's important to change your environment and not just wish and hope. You have to take concrete action and change your environment. Is that correct, sir?
That's true. Hope is good, but it's not enough. And that's the difference between where we are now and we were 500 years ago. Now mm-hmm. we have democracy, we have human rights, we have women rights, we have so many things. This did not happen because people were just hoping. This happened
right.
because people were pushing for change and were pursuing change and were putting hard efforts into it.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. What prompted you to write this book, Dr. Cotella?
So after the, using this advocacy tour and trips and achieving some of the result that, as we mentioned earlier, saved millions of people or protected patient care and here in the United States, I felt it good to share the experience with others who have also causes in their lives that they are passionate about, that they feel that it should happen, it's fair, it's just, and they wanted to see the way to make change happen and make massive changes in the world. And so I felt, I need to share the experience with them and show them a way and a roadmap on how things could be changed if they follow these steps and be persistent and put some hard work there.
Now, it seems to me that some of the challenges that you have described anyway today are pretty grandiose. For example, getting Trump's support for the Syrian situation. Let me ask you this. In your career, what are some of the biggest challenges that you have faced in trying to make change happen at the state level and the international level? Real quick, sir, we're down to about 10 minutes, or down to about a minute and a half.
I would say I put actually a chapter in the book about the challenges of advocacy.
Mm-hmm.
I called it Advocacy Ain't Easy. So that's the title of the chapter. And I put about 9 challenges. One important challenge is convincing people to shift minds from humanitarian to advocacy. I give them an example is, okay, well, people are getting killed in somewhere and internationally.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just and became refugees, if you just keep giving them food, you're not solving their problem. More refugees will come. More people will become miserable. But if you go and do advocacy and start and try to fix the political situation mm-hmm. that caused these people to become refugees, then
right.
you solve their problem and they will go back to their homes and you don't have to feed them anymore. So this is one challenge, just shift in their mindset and mentality. And the other thing is a lot of people don't believe in this. They think the conspiracy theory, everything is controlled by the big power. No one can do anything against this. And I tell them, well, if you're a believer in God, God usually asks us to work
right,
and work
right.
hard to make changes. And if, we don't believe in this and we just surrender to this ideology, we're thinking like that these big corporations are God. And
mm-hmm.
He did not tell us to believe in that. He told us to work hard to make changes, believe that our work will yield positive.
Yeah, I think you have to believe it. I think you also have to believe in God. I'm a pretty strong believer. Been chatting with Dr. Tariq Cotella, author of The 6 Pillars of Advocacy, Embrace Your Cause, and Transform Lives. Dr. Cotella, thank you so much, sir.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it and enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.